and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Now, before we go any further, can I just double check something? Are we swearing and blaspheming this week? Are we allowed to?
I think so. I think it was a one-time challenge.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, well, I think what I've decided is I'm going to try to be less sweary and less blasphemous on the podcast. I'm naturally a swearer. I like swearing. I enjoy it. I swear so much in a day. I've spent most of today swearing. And it's sort of a realisation to me that it's such a big part of my life. I don't find it offensive, and swearing is such a big part of my life. But I thought, I would just try. I mean, we had to do it when we were on the radio. You can't swear when you're on the radio. So I'm going to try to not swear as much. That's not to say I'm not going to, because it's part of who I am.
I don't think we did let out any expletives on the radio, did we? We were quite well controlled.
Yeah, I think I let one out once. I said bollocks once, but we got away with it. It was all right. I just want to check, has Big Jeff done his litter collecting yet? Because I'm not letting this go, by the way. I want pictures. Ideally, I want a recording of him out doing it.
He called me. First of all, he wanted a VAR check on the see you next Tuesday joke at the end of the show.
Yeah.
And seeing as we're recording today and it is Tuesday, I think that's even more justification. I hadn't sworn. I didn't use any bad words. We are actually recording on the following Tuesday.
It was a matter of fact.
Yeah. So I denied him on that. And then he asked permission if he could go leafleting instead. So I think he's doing some...
Hang on, that's the very opposite of litter picking. He's just providing households with more litter.
More junk mail. I think he's doing some political leafleting. So I said, that'll do. Close enough, that'll do.
Well, hang on. Do you say that'll do? It depends on what political leafleting he's doing. How offensive is this political leafleting?
Let's put it this way. I think you would approve.
Good.
Thanks. And if I had objected to who he was doing it on behalf of, I wouldn't have allowed it either. So I think we're all right.
Oh, come on, Nigel Farage. Oh, that's good. Okay, well, I know where we stand. I just needed to know where I stood for this week so I can sort of relax a little bit more.
No pressure.
I'm trying to relax, but literally, about 2 minutes before we started this today, I was just getting ready. I just set myself up and I heard a noise that sort of made me jump a little bit from the next room that I'm in at the moment.
Oh, dear God, what's going on now? Oh, before we get into that, can I just ask, is the beeping still going from the next door neighbours?
Beeping's still going. That's just ongoing... It's been going on for weeks now. I mean, it's continual. It's a continual beeping sound. I don't know how they live with it, but it's still going on. So that's just a continual part of my daily soundtrack.
You see, for a man with such a short fuse, you are incredibly patient with this thing. Anyway, what was the latest noise that made you jump?
Well, it's a good noise. I've just poked my head into the room next door. I just caught a mouse in the mousetrap. It's a fresh kill.
Oh, if only we'd been recording 5 minutes earlier, we might have caught the snap on the podcast.
I know. It doesn't look a very big mouse. It won't create a big meal for a fox when I put it out into the garden, but I've got one. My friend sent me a video the other day of his compost bin where a mouse has had little babies, and he sent me a video of these tiny little pink things. I mean, literally newborn mice. Now, I know they're outside in the compost bin, but I just didn't kill them. Just drown them.
Drown them?
Just pour water into it.
Is that cruel? Monster.
Is that
You're
cruel
a monster.
To me? All right. Well, all right. How would you humanely do it? What, a lethal injection?
Well,
I reckon half a... just a little bit of paracetamol would kill a little mouse.
Why are you going with all these very specific methods?
Hang them.
I did once go to my... Hang them with a little tiny noose. I went out to my my main bin a few weeks back and I thought, what the hell's wrong with that? I didn't... All my rubbish is all sort of messed up and chewed and stuff. And then just as the thought was processing in my head, a little mouse popped up in the bin.
Oh, see, they're everywhere.
So very much like the woman from Tom and Jerry, I ran away immediately. And unfortunately, the bin lid fell closed. And I just ran back into the house and didn't have the testicular fortitude to go and deal with the problem. And then I put it out of my mind. And then the next day I went back and the bin had been emptied by the bin men.
Oh.
And I thought, oh my God, I've essentially sent that mouse to the crusher.
To the crusher. What a death. What an inhumane way to go. What you sort of hope in a way is that because you probably made the mouse jump by going to the bin, that maybe through shock it died of a heart attack first. Because they do, you know, they're very skittish. I think they have a very high chance of a heart attack. My friend of mine caught one in a humane trap once. I'm sure I've told you this before. And just before he let it go, he just sort of rattled the humane trap. It was sort of joking as if to say, "Don't you come back." And the thing just died in the trap.
I bet that probably upset him because he'd gone to the effort of buying the humane trap and then still killed the little sod. So, but can I just check? You've heard the snap, which obviously has given you great joy.
Yeah.
Have you actually popped your head round to check that it is dead?
No, it's in there. It's dead. It's as soon as we finish recording, it will be sent on its next part of its journey into the afterlife. I might give it some sort of Viking burial. I might set fire to a ship.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where you are on the sort of Jeffrey Dahmer spectrum, but considering when we finish this recording, your next job is to deal with a corpse and you sound this happy about it, it's a bit of a red flag, I'm afraid.
It's a victory, though. You've got to look at this as a victory for me. It's all out war with them. And the death of one, I mean, what I'm hoping is that it doesn't look a very big mouse. I was hoping that this might be like the linchpin of the mouse mob.
The big cheese, if you will.
This might be the one that sort of tells the others what to do, but it looks as though it's a junior, a minion, probably not part of the upper echelons of the mouse invasion.
I think you might be confusing mice with vampires, where you have to kill the original and sort of top dog to get rid of the lot of them. I don't think that's how mice work. I'm not sure they'll recognise the death of their boss as an instruction to leave.
But it's not like other animals where there's a hierarchical system.
You know,
dogs, for example, have a hierarchical system, don't they? You know, there's always the top dog, the alpha. But in mice, do we not have the alpha mouse?
Well, I mean, the alpha mouse would be Mickey Mouse, who is the top dog of Disney. I mean, ironically, top dog, but...
Well, surely the alpha mouse would be Mighty Mouse.
No, I think Mickey Mouse is a bigger star than Mighty Mouse. Worth more money, I'm sure.
Oh, more money, but I mean, I suppose he brings happiness to millions, but I don't know, I see Mickey Mouse as he's just part of the... he's a capitalist mouse. He's all about the money, you know. and he's not even out there greeting people. I mean, why are we talking about him as if he's a real thing? But he's not. He sends humans dressed as him to rake in the money. I just got this feeling that if there is a Mickey Mouse, if there was a real Mickey Mouse, he'd be sitting in his little office counting his little money just while everyone else does all the work. I think he'd be a tyrant. I think he'd be an absolute arsehole, to be honest.
Sounds like he could run a radio station.
I think he'd be horrible. I feel sorry for Minnie. I mean, she's probably in a terribly a terrible relationship.
Where are you going with this train of thought? Because you left me at the station, I'm afraid. Anyway, while we're on the subject, can I just say it's so
Danger
nice.
Mouse. What about Danger Mouse? He was a good mouse, wasn't he?
It's very nice to hear your voice in such high quality this week, because I've tried the reason, by the way, we normally record on Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
And that didn't happen because you were sulking because you were having some sort of technological disaster yesterday. And I couldn't get hold of you for love nor money. I tried to phone you and I had a very garbled hello on the other end of the phone. So I said, "Oh, hi, Dave, how's it going?" And then there was just silence. And then for about 30 seconds, nothing. And then I just heard you screaming the C word.
That's what I mean. I like swearing. I told you that. It's part of my natural...
directed at me. And then you just...
I told you it wasn't. I told you it wasn't afterwards. But yeah, it was. It was just like, oh, God, yeah.
No, so what's going on?
Oh, I'm just going through... I say a phase. This phase seems to have been lasting about 40 years. Of everything I touch, everything I go near, breaks, doesn't work. Even the chair I'm sitting in today, it's a foldable chair I sit in, just to give you a bit of background information.
Well, like a deck chair.
Yeah, it's like a garden chair I sit in when we record.
I didn't know that.
It's one of those that has arms, you know, when you can tip the back reclines a little bit, but you have to tip the arms up to do that, right?
Kind of, so, yeah. Oh, yeah, that is like a deck chair.
So it is like a deck chair. That's what I sit on when we record, right? And I unfolded the chair to start recording today. The arm fell off. So that's, I don't know if you can hear it rattling about. So I don't know why that's fallen off. There's absolutely no reason for that to fall off. So that's another thing, tick, another thing broken that I've touched. Everything I touch at the moment, everything I go near is breaking. And yesterday it was the turn of my phone. I don't think it's the phone. Basically, no one could hear me yesterday. And it was one of those days where I had to make lots of phone calls, and like really important phone calls I had to make yesterday. And it was just a nightmare because everyone was saying to me, I can't hear you, Mr. Smith. Sorry, Mr. Smith. Can you say that again, Mr. Smith? And two of them, one didn't know the name, but two of them referenced that comedian in the 1970s or 1980s who would pretend that he was breaking up and just saying certain things. Do you remember me? The second person named him Norman Collier. You're probably too young to remember him. But he would do that sort of thing. We'd go, hey, look, you're coming to... That was part of his act. It wasn't much of an act, really. Because the first person said, oh, you remind me of that 1970s comic who always got the words wrong. And I thought he meant Stanley Unwin, who used to do that thing. Do you know Stanley Unwin?
I know the reference. He used to do... what do you call it when you get the first...
Like spoonerisms.
Spoonerisms, that's it. Where you get the first letter of each word in reverse order.
Yeah, but it was more than that. It was like his own little language, because he'd go all he'd go down the stereo to the world, the old, and it was weird, like, thing. But and it was weird because that's all he did. Like, he was in films, like, even in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, he appears, and he just does that act. It's a weird, but I love Stanley Unwin, but I thought that'd be weird if he says that. But anyway, it's Norman Collier that people thought I was sounding like yesterday. So I was just having nightmares with the phone, and then I thought, I need to get in touch with the mobile company. So I go online and it says check your area coverage. So I go on that, and it's just the most ludicrous one line. It just says, oh, we're currently doing some upgrades in your area. Sorry for any disruption. And I was thinking, well, surely you should text people. Surely you should email your customers and let them know that there's going to be disruption, because... Like, I'm a busy man. I got important phone calls to make. It was a nightmare. Just please, for the love of God, treat your customers like customers.
I mean,
like people who matter.
I have to ask the obvious question, which is, how did you expect them to get in contact with you over the phone when your phone was broken?
Well, don't text me. Like, send me a text, an email.
Service was down.
No, but no. They could have sent it days in advance if they knew they were doing something in the area. Today, it's a little bit better. I managed to have one phone call earlier where they could hear me, so I'm hoping we're over the worst of it. But it's just, oh, man, I'm sick of everything having to be a battle. I'm sick of companies treating you like you... don't matter. I pay these people lots of money and nobody treats me. I think the problem, Ben, I don't know whether everyone has this issue, but I sort of feel like I've spent a lifetime with doormat just written on my forehead. Or, you know, it's like, oh, it's only Mr. Smith. He's too polite to really go off the handle at us.
You were that polite when I heard the certain word that came out of your mouth when I tried to phone you. Can I ask, by the way, When other people, you know, your, I'm assuming, clients or colleagues or, you know, people that you're doing work for, when they called you and had trouble understanding, did you launch into a foul-mouthed rant at those people as well?
No, I didn't.
Just for me, that little pleasure, was it?
Can I just tell you that the foul-mouthed rant was, because I think you said, how are you getting on today or something? You asked me that. And the reason the C-word came out is because I was just in the middle hassle of having to listen to and try to, just for my work, it's really boring, but it was a Mark Knopfler interview. You know Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits?
Yeah.
Right? He's got a new album out, and part of my work, I've got to do this thing. And he was doing an interview with someone from the BBC, and it was like two old codgers. And I use the word codgers there instead of the word I use to you. Mumbling and droning on and like forgetting what they were saying halfway through. And it, I just thought, oh, for God's sake, even this, I'm going near and it's shit.
Now, you see, all that context would have been lovely, but all I got was about 20 seconds of silence, the C word, and then 20 seconds more silence. And I thought, what have I done to offend him now?
No, but the good thing is you got the salient points of the conversation. You know, if only the insurance company that I had to speak to yesterday morning could have heard those words, maybe they would have treated me a little bit different.
So, I mean, I've had kind of the opposite problem this week, which is we've had a very minor issue with a burst pipe, not in my house, but just in the local area that I live.
Right.
And Southeast Water have gone from notifying me to, I would say, borderline harassing me with the bombardment of constant notifications as to what's happening next, what the next step is.
That's brilliant, though. That's brilliant.
The repair they were planning was happening between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m., expected to last about 30 minutes. And I thought, that's great, but you don't need to tell me about it nine times. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I think that's brilliant. I think the more notifications companies can give it, I mean, by the way, I'm not giving too much support to water companies considering the terrible ways they behave, but you know, I'll give them a little bit of leeway there because I think that's the right thing. I think it's good to update people. It's good to tell the customers what's happening. Imagine if they'd not sent you any details, anything, and just turned the water off. Imagine how furious you'd be.
Between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m, you have Southeast Water, if you're listening, you officially have my permission to randomly turn my tap water off between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m.
That's a very selfish attitude. What about everyone else in the area who might, people might be working nights, they might be just getting home, they want to have a bath, a shower, they want to have a cup of tea. I mean,
Fair enough.
You know, between 11 and 2, there's still a lot of action going on in households, Ben, is what I'm saying.
But no, that's a fair enough point, but the other thing that bothered me about it was these constant messages, right? I still remember quite fresh the toilet roll shortage from the pandemic. And I thought, oh, great. That means you're not going to be able to buy a bottle of water in East Grinstead for love nor money for the next week now, because everyone's going to, because Southeast Water are making such a fuss about this hour of work they've got to do. They've finally got to get off their arse and do some work. That now, as a result, there's going to be panic buying of water all over the RH postcode. It's going to be dreadful.
Well, maybe they could start notifying people when they're going to pump raw sewage into the local waterways. I mean, I cannot understand the whole argument. It's like, oh, well, we've had a lot of rain, so yeah, we've had to put a lot of old shit out into the rivers and the seas. That's not good enough. Not good enough answer, is it?
No. Do we need to throw in an allegedly here? Because they have.
Well,
specifically, the company I named have been doing this.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, the Thames Water have.
That's why I'm saying be careful.
Well, they all allegedly are. They're all just pumping it out left, right and centre like it. And then when someone says you can't do that, they go, well, we can when it's raining, and we've had a lot of rain, haven't we? So, we can pump it all out. Meanwhile, we'll give our shareholders a lot of money and not actually invest in the infrastructure. But I hope your dad's political leaflet is going to address these issues.
Trev, I think it's about that time of year when one of our favourite old news stories comes out.
Yeah.
The search for the Loch Ness Monster.
The search for the Loch Ness Monster. Well, they do seem to have a search every year. I think, was it last year? Was the biggest search ever undertaken where they did find some anomalies, but they couldn't really say what they were, if I remember rightly.
Yes, although that doesn't mean the answer is the Loch Ness Monster. And normally when I see this news story, because like I say, it is like clockwork, at least once a year there'll be some old tripe about the Loch Ness Monster. But I got a bit riled up this time, because they're wanting to conduct an even bigger search this year,
yeah.
And the organisers of the search are hoping to rope in NASA.
NASA?
Yes. You know, the people that send rockets to space and do actually important scientific work.
Well, this is important scientific work.
No, it isn't.
If there's a creature lurking in the depths of a lock that we haven't yet identified, and it could be some species that we're unaware of to date, that's important scientific work, surely.
What a waste of an actually important resource's time.
And when you think about it, all life came from the stars. So there is a cosmic link to any life force on Earth. So therefore, you could argue that it falls under NASA's remit to be involved.
Very tenuous link. I mean, on that argument, you could say that NASA are responsible for investigating everything because everything came from the Big Bang or stardust.
Yeah. Well, they are sort of in many ways, aren't they? You know, by sending probes up to find out about how the universe began, they are effectively researching everything.
I mean, I just think that they have more important tasks to be getting on with. We know that the sun is eventually going to die. I know it's not going to happen in our lifetime. We've got to
Was it 13 billion years or is it 6 billion years? There's several billion years before the sun burns out. By which point, I've said this before, but the human beings won't be alive then.
You don't know that. And honestly, I can't really think of an environment that is... If you said, what's the opposite of space?
Yeah.
I would have probably said the deep waters. They deal with all the way up there, as far away from the Earth as possible. So deep underwater, I would say, is the opposite of NASA's remit.
I mean, yes, I suppose in terms of NASA's raison d'etre, is about sending things skywards up, then yes, I'll give you that. Although, having said that, when craft return, the newer lunar modules will return to Earth in the same way as the Apollo missions did, that they will enter the sea. So there is a sea connection for NASA.
When was the last time a NASA astronaut or any sort of piece of space equipment landed back through the Earth's atmosphere into Loch Ness that they had to go and fish it out and coincidentally bump into this mythical being?
I don't think Loch Ness and NASA have crossed paths as yet.
It's such a ridiculous thing. To me, it's like trying to get the FBI to look for Santa Claus or maybe bother the King's Guard to search for the Tooth Fairy or something. While we're on the subject, we'll come back to this, but the King's Guard, they may as well, I think their time would be better spent searching for the Tooth Fairy, but we'll come back to that in a minute.
Have you ever thought about what noise the Loch Ness Monster might make?
Maybe, but I think I'd probably be basing it on my memory as a child of the cartoon The Family Ness.
Oh, The Family Ness with the thistle whistle.
Yeah. And I remember a lot of bagpipes.
I don't think the Loch Ness Monster, if the Loch Ness Monster exists, I very much doubt it's evolved to a point where it can play the bagpipes.
Well, you're probably right.
Because I reckon if there was a creature that was able to play the bagpipes, I think that would have made the news. I mean, Esther Ranson and That's Life would have been onto that like a show. Did you see the thing about the dog, by the way? The famous sausages dog.
No, what's this?
What do you remember? Well, you're too young, but there was it's a famous thing. You must have seen it. There was a program called That's Life with Esther Ranson back in the 70s and 80s, and it was a dreadful program, right? It was I think they did some good things. They did lots of good sort of consumer-based things. I think even Childline might have come out of that. But then they do lots of silly stories. And one of the things they did was this dog who would say sausages along with a few other words. So this was about 50 years ago. It's come out in the last week or so that the dog, of course, wasn't saying sausages. It was just growling because it wasn't particularly happy being held by its owner in a particular way. And the owner was sort of strangling the dog in a way to make it say these words. And the worst thing about it was the production team and all at the time went, we're not sure about this. This doesn't seem right. And apparently they just went, well, no, the dog's tail is wagging, so it's obviously happy, which isn't necessarily necessarily true, is it? A dog's tail doesn't always wag just because it's happy. It can wag in other scenarios. And basically, this dog wasn't happy at all. But this has been a famous thing for years, for 50 years. Oh, the sausages dog. Ah, sausages. I think adverts followed it. There were dogs saying sausages on adverts. And basically, it was a bit of animal cruelty going on for great entertainment value.
I just want to clear up. When you said that and I laughed, that wasn't me laughing at that happening to that poor animal. That was me laughing in shock, because what I honestly thought you were going to say was that it turned out the owner was sort of like a ventriloquist, throwing his voice to
it's
sound
darker like, than that, I'm afraid.
To sound like the dog was sort of saying, "Rotters," but the fact of the matter is, you really surprised me. You took me off guard by basically saying, "No, the owner had the dog in a rear naked choke and was throttling the poor little beast,
sort of moving its vocal cords basically to make it speak." I mean, it's utter cruelty, but
it's horrible.
Passed off as entertainment. But what I was suggesting was that had there been an animal that could play the bagpipes, that's life would have been there like a shot.
Fair enough.
So I mean, they probably would use a cattle prod to make it play the bagpipes. We would have all laughed at it.
So if you were to get the Loch Ness Monster in a stranglehold, I wonder what noise it would make.
Haggis.
No one knows the noise of the Loch Ness Monster, do they, really?
I don't know. We don't know because we don't know what animal. Would it be like a whale's call? Would it be? I saw this thing this week about particular frogs that are basically screaming the whole time, but we can't hear them. Other animals can hear them, but they're just constantly screaming. And I thought, that's very much like me. I'm constantly internally, I'm just screaming pretty much 24/7, but no one can really hear it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit like this podcast, really. It's a giant cry for help that no one listens to.
No, so I don't know what sort of noise. I'd imagine if there is a Loch Ness Monster, it would make a booming noise. I think you'd hear it from one end of the lock to the other. I think it would boom across the lock. It'd almost be like a sonic boom.
There's been really grainy footage and photos of things, but there hasn't been any recorded sounds of the Loch Ness Monster that I'm aware of.
No, I very much doubt it.
Just before we end this segment, I mentioned earlier on, being flippant, that we might as well send the King's Guard to look for the Tooth Fairy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said that would be a better use of their time. And to be honest, that wasn't really a joke. I don't want to be... Well, you know what? I don't care about being controversial because this is something I actually believe in. I right. don't like or respect the King's Guard.
What have you got? They're trained soldiers. You know, if there was a war, they'd be called into action. They're not... Or are they just there to protect the king? Now I'm questioning the whole existence.
Presumably, they can't all bugger off and leave the king unguarded, can they? That makes a mockery of the whole point of them, doesn't it?
Well, I don't. But they must belong to a regiment. If there was a war, surely the king would go, "You think perhaps you should go and fight instead of, I can look after myself."
I don't think he's going to leave himself unguarded, Trev. That's not a very clever move. Well, that would be like playing chess. Our king would be in jeopardy of being put in check. I can't have that.
I wonder what happened in the Second World War.
We've already lost the Queen. The King is vulnerable.
Well, I wonder what happened in the Second World War when the King and the Queen were at Buckingham Palace and they stayed in London. Did they still have guard? They must have had guard because, I mean, they would have been an obvious target for the Nazis.
Well, yeah, you'd have thought so. That would have been a big result for Hitler, wouldn't it, taking out the King and Queen?
But Churchill used to go around. He had his own gun. And I've read his bodyguard's book as well, and he would really piss his bodyguard off because Churchill had no real thoughts for his own safety. So he would go up on the roof during bombings at Downing Street. He'd walk around, but he always had a gun on him. Of course, if he was captured, he would just take himself out, but also he might take a few Nazis out at the same time.
Is that legal? Was Winston Churchill a licensed firearm carrier? That sounds very easy. Because if you heard tomorrow that Rishi Sunak was packing heat, I'd panic.
I think there's different... Like, when there's a war on, I think things are different, aren't they? I mean, if there was a war on, if Rishi Sunak wanted to run around with a gun, fine.
It was really funny this week. I started an argument with Mrs. Ben about how many female prime ministers there's been.
Yeah.
And I was so confident until I remembered that for about a fortnight, Liz Truss was actually the prime minister.
Yeah, there she was. Yeah, that's, I think she's just released her book, hasn't she? She's what has she got to write about?
I'm sure it was a very busy 2 weeks. But...
I walked into number 10. I left. Oh, sorry. Fucked the economy.
She could write that book on a beer mat, couldn't she?
You see, she's endorsing Trump for president. I mean, she's gone proper mental right wing now, isn't she? She's just, yeah. Anyway.
So back to the King's Guard.
Yeah.
What I don't like about them, and I have the utmost respect for their military service and their dedication to all that. That's great. Yeah. No problem with that at all.
Yeah.
My issue comes with, I don't like people who get angry too quickly, who get 0 to 60. Feels very un-British. The first point of call when you want someone out of the way is say, excuse me, I beg your pardon, excuse me, would you mind if I...
Yeah.
Not screaming at the top of their lungs, stand back for the King's Guard. And by the way, will they at least stop to give you a chance to stand back for the King's Guard?
Not when they're on a march, mate. You can't be stopping when you're marching. You've got to keep going.
I have seen video footage of them booting and trampling over children, women, tourists with their backs turned who don't know what's about to hit them, not even a chance to brace for impact. And I saw a video the other day of a King's Guard, someone was posing next to it, it was on horseback.
Yeah.
And there was this woman who was a tourist who was posing for a photo.
Yeah.
And the horse just went fucking rogue. And it was biting at her coat. It started ripping her coat off of her.
Wow.
Poor woman looked startled. Did the guard on the horseback do anything to stop this? Did he fuck?
The thing is, though, mate, if the King's Guard's horse is playing up a little bit, I mean, surely there are little things the soldier can do, but let's say he gets off the horse, tries to sort out, he could then be court-martialed or something. You know, he could be disciplined for taking his eye off the ball. What if he was getting off the horse, sorting the horse out, and, I don't know, Al-Qaeda drove through?
Well, that would be some very unfortunate timing. If just at the moment this little Asian tourist is trying to get her photo taken next to the King's Guard.
What if she was a decoy?
Happens to attack her. She's an Al-Qaeda Asian decoy.
What if she's the decoy? She is sent in to send the horses. She's wearing some sort of horse nip.
The other problem as well is if you put yourself in their shoes for a moment, imagine if you
Boots,
went
I think
to...
you'll find they'll be wearing.
No, not the King's Guard, the tourist. Imagine if you were in somewhere in Asia, and someone in a language you don't understand because you're an Englishman touring, you know, you're a tourist, the literal definition of a tourist, someone suddenly from behind screams something very loud in a language you don't understand, and then shoulder charges or just simply marches through you, wouldn't you feel a little bit peeved?
You would, but I would imagine it's the same all around the world, that if you get in the way of an oncoming group of soldiers, they will do exactly the same. Like I imagine it's the same discipline in any armed forces around the world, that if you get in their way when they're trying to come through and do their job, they're going to shout at you and push you out of the way. But there are a lot of videos like that. I will say I've seen a lot of those, and sometimes you think that is a bit much. But what I will say on the other side, the flip side of the coin, is that you do see some nice things. There was one recently I saw of this young kid, I'd say he was about 7 or 8. He was dressed in his little military outfit with the furry bearskin hat and all that stuff. And he was marching up and down next to the soldiers. And it was a lovely moment where the soldier who was there gave him a salute.
Yeah, I know which video you're talking about. I have seen it because I've been going down a bit of a rabbit hole on the King's Guard recently. And whilst I can see that was a one-off lovely moment, probably made that little kid's day.
Yeah.
That doesn't excuse booting women to the floor. I'm sorry. It's not in the same league. Lovely. I mean, because that's what they should be doing, providing nice little moments for children, you know, photo opportunities, nice things, not slamming tourists and women and children to the floor.
The clue's in the name, mate. It's the King's Guard. Their job is to guard the king, not fuck about with tourists.
What threat's he under?
Constant. He's under constant threat from all kinds of angles.
So you're telling me the 5-foot Asian woman who's over here to get a nice photo outside Buckingham Palace, she is a fair game target to the Queen, to the King's Guard or the Queen's Guard, who have to kick the shit out of her in case she's there covert to get Charles? You're having a laugh.
All I'm saying is,
there's no defence.
All I'm saying is, trust nobody. The little old lady is more likely to be the bomb carrying terrorist than anyone else. Now, Ben, do you have nightmares still? Because I always think nightmares are a thing you get when you're a kid, but I still occasionally have a dream. I wouldn't say it's a nightmare. I don't wake up sort of absolutely terrified, but I do still have the odd dream where I wake up and I'm just not at ease.
Yeah, I don't think I've had a wake up screaming I'm terrified nightmare in a while. What I have had a fair few of recently is aggressive dreams. I won't call them nightmares, but I'll get into a very heated argument with someone in a dream.
You know, I have those occasionally. I go through phases with those. I haven't had one for a while, but I did go through a stage where I used to wake myself up shouting at people in dreams.
So do you think it comes from people you might have a bit of, like, background beef with? Like, have you ever dreamt that you've had a screaming match with me?
No. I think most of the time when I'm having those dreams where I'm screaming at people, when I'm really cross with people, it tends to always be in a workplace environment. But the interesting thing is, and I can't say this for certain because you don't always remember clearly, but I don't think often I'm screaming at anyone that I recognise. It's often a sort of a new face. You know, I've sort of invented a face in my subconscious. And I don't know whether that just encapsulates all the people I want to scream at.
So I might be in there somewhere.
So yeah, there might be an element of you in this amalgamation of a face that's in front of me that I'm screaming at. But I think it's a way of you channeling and getting anger out, isn't it? I think the dream, I find the whole dream thing fascinating. Because I don't think we can really understand the dream. I think that we could get NASA into that side of things. Let's find out a bit more about dreams. Like, what? They say it's the subconscious working stuff out, but yes, I think it's a bit more than that. I think that, I don't know whether you maybe move into another dimension during sleep.
Well, I'm not looking forward to this other dimension because it's really quite argumentative on my end, this dimension. So I'm not looking forward to getting there anytime soon.
But I think there are those nightmares that we all have. I tell you one I still have, probably every 6 months I have this dream, and it's so real and so vivid, and that's losing your teeth. Do you ever dream about your teeth falling out?
No, I haven't dreamt about that. That is supposed to mean something.
Well, it's one of those really common nightmares, and that's why I wanted to talk about this, because as always, during the course of a week, I end up reading some old shit. I spend my life online these days just reading article after article after article. Most of it nonsense, but some of it I think, oh, that's interesting, which, you know, I bring to you in a podcast form.
No, you're right, though. Teeth falling out is a very common one.
Apparently, it can mean a lot of things. This is why I came across this article that was weird but common nightmares. And teeth falling out is one of the top ones. And apparently, it can mean lots of things. One, it's an interpretation that there's change in your life involving loss that could be personal or at work. Or it could be like the loss of money or finances. So it's all about sort of losing something. So the teeth obviously signify the loss of something.
I can tell you, I like I say, I don't really have nightmares anymore, but I used to have one as a youngster. It was a recurring nightmare that I used to have, and I don't know quite if you'll be able to what exactly you need to look this up, but I feel like this is a common one too. It was, I would be crossing a road or near a road, and I would fall, and I'm now in the road. I've fallen down. I'm in the road, and a car is coming towards me, and I can't get back up.
Oh, right. So you're stuck to the spot.
Yeah. And to me, as an amateur dream analysist, which I've just decided that I am, I would say that's indicating a feeling like a loss of control of things. You know, things are out of your control. The car's coming towards you and there's nothing you can do about it. You're stuck to the floor, can't move, loss of control. But that's my armchair psychology. I don't know if you've got anything in your little book there to point out anything else.
Okay, well, I think this is a fairly common dream, and it is in one of the articles that I was reading about. I got a feeling this is a bit of armchair dreamology. Is that what you called it?
Psychology, I think I called it. But I like dreamology. That's a good
dreamology.
Word.
I mean, it's probably a better word for it. It's probably some sort of Latin or Greek word to describe what the interpretation of dreams is. But I'm going to call it dreamology.
Stephen Fry would know, but he's not here.
Of course he'd know. We can only dream of that kind of intelligence, can't we?
Ironically, yes.
But here's one thing. So, apparently the road is the road of life. So that's your journey, that you're on the road of life.
Yes.
Falling to the road, that's about stagnation, lack of success.
Okay. I mean, ticking every box so far.
A car approaching means that other people will run over you. You know, your business competitions, your friends, your family, they're just going to steamroller all over you. You've got no chance of getting out of the way. They're just going to use and abuse you and then discard you.
So I'm going down the journey of life. I find myself stuck being steamrolled by my so-called friends. This sounds perfect.
Do you ever have one about public nudity?
No, I don't think I ever have had that dream.
I tell you what I get. This is another one I get fairly regularly. It's not just about being naked, but I'm also on the toilet in a public area, but very exposed, like in the middle of a town square. I'm suddenly on the toilet.
Now, that has actually happened to me, but not in a dream.
Hang on, what do you mean that's happened to you?
Years,
is this one of those, like, those toilets with a door that opens? Is it one of
those? Yes. Years and years ago, I put in some money to use one of those public toilets.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's not get graphic, but I didn't need a wee.
Right.
So I'm sitting on the throne with the, you know, pants around my ankles, and I don't know what happened. Maybe it malfunctioned. Maybe I ran out of
maybe
time.
Maybe you were just in there way too long, mate.
I don't know. But all of a sudden, the door decided to unveil me, pants down.
Wow.
To the high street.
Oh, wow. Were there people there? Did people look in?
Fortunately, I was able to... there wasn't anyone immediately around, but I knew it was only a matter of seconds until there would be, because it was a busy high street. And in my panicked state, I quickly worked out exactly how the toilet worked. Don't ask me how I figured this out.
Right.
But I realised when it detects weight on the floor, it knows there's someone in there. So I immediately leapt on top of the toilet, so it wouldn't detect the weight of my feet on the floor.
Right.
And that seemed to close the door again. So then I was sort of balancing on the toilet bowl, trying to get my jeans up.
If someone had looked in at that point, how bizarre that would have looked. You crouching on top of the toilet with your trousers around. I mean, that would have been an even weirder view for people to see, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so this reality sounds like an anxiety dream, but it genuinely happened, and I never use those. And I don't trust the toilet on the train either, because
no.
I feel they do the same thing.
I saw one open on someone once on a train.
You see?
I was coming back from, I don't know where I've been, it was a long journey, and my eye line is directly towards the toilet, right? And someone goes in. I didn't see them go in. But I suddenly, just from the corner of my eye, saw the door open. And, well, let's just say the carriage got a real eyeful, is what I'm going to say.
No.
And, I mean, she jumped up.
Oh,
that, again, there must have been that real panic. Because I can imagine the mortifying moment that door opens for anyone. And I kind of got a feeling that it was like she dived towards the button. That's how I kind of remember it.
She sort of jumped on top of the bog. She needs to learn.
But then it's that thing afterwards, though. Like, she obviously shut the door, did what she had to do. But that moment when you then come out again from the toilet.
I hadn't thought of that, because at least on the high street, people will probably keep walking. But on a train carriage, they're just
I would have sat there waiting for you to come out. I would have loved that. I've been taking photos when you came out and everything. But on a train, there's a captive audience. They've not gone anywhere. So there's that moment where you've got to come out and face the reality. I mean, I don't think I'd come out for the rest of the journey. I think I'd just sit in there for the next 4 hours or whatever.
Miss your stop, end up in Cambridge. Thing is, I'm pretty hard to embarrass. I have quite a high threshold for embarrassment, hence why I'm happy to go on the radio with you, make an arse of myself, go on this podcast, tell embarrassing stories, make an arse of myself. But in that moment, I thought, even I'm a little bit embarrassed by this.
Yeah. God, that awful. There is a thing, the public nakedness thing, again, it's a common dream. It's all about being exposed, isn't it? It's about being vulnerable. But it's also could be a thing about, is there a secret that you are hiding? You know, and is the dream subconsciously telling you maybe it's time for you to come clean about something?
No, I'm not. It's probably a fault of mine that I tend to be a bit too honest with people at times. So I don't have really any secrets. I tend to sort of not know when to shut my mouth. And as such, I don't really have any secrets as such. But so I don't think it's that. I think it's just more of a embarrassment thing. Like, I think it's quite literal to me. Like, there isn't any sort of hidden meaning. Just wouldn't it be quite embarrassing to be stark bollock naked in public?
Here's another one, being chased. Do you ever dream that someone's chasing you? I used to get that a lot as a kid. I remember a very vivid dream when I was a kid. Like, this was a proper nightmare that stayed with me. Like, most dreams you don't remember, do you? And I woke up last night and I'd had a dream. I thought, I knew that I wanted to talk about this on the podcast. And I woke up and I'd had this dream. I thought, that's the dream. I'll talk about that. As the day's gone on, I can't tell you what that dream was anymore. It's completely gone.
This is why, for exactly that reason, you need to keep a pad and a pen next to your bedside table and write them down immediately, because I do the same thing. Sometimes I wake up thinking I've just had the best business idea anyone's ever had. This is my meal ticket out of here. I'm going to make my billions off of this. And I think, should I write this down? And I think, no, Ben, obviously you don't need to write this down. Who could possibly forget such a genius idea? And then an hour later, I think, was that dream again?
You know, Paul McCartney said that the song Yesterday came to him in a dream. I mean, if that was me, I'd wake up and go, what a great song. Oh, shit. What was it? Can't remember anything. I can't even remember the tune. None of the words. All gone. Really annoying.
The problem is as well, when you wake up and it feels like such a great idea, on the one occasion I have written it down and gone back to it later, I thought, the fuck was I thinking? What is this gibberish I've put down here?
I had one a few weeks back where I dreamt a whole it was either a sitcom or a drama, but same thing. I remember waking up going, what a fucking amazing idea. And then by the time I'd got out of bed, all of it had gone. And I remember being gutted because I knew in the pit of my stomach that I'd had something incredible there. But you're right, had I have remembered it and written it down, give it a week or so, I'd gone, what? That? No, just leave that, Trev. Throw that bit of paper in the bin, move on. But anyway, going back to dreams you do remember, like those vivid dreams, like I think we all have certain dreams in our life that stay with you forever. Some of them good, some of them bad, right? But this dream has always stayed with me. I was probably only about 6 or 7 and having this vivid dream that I was being chased by giant raspberries.
And raspberries?
Giant raspberries were chasing me. And I was terrified.
I think being chased is a fairly simple sort of, you can deduce what that means from dream analysis, but why raspberries? I'm curious what raspberries represent in dreams.
I don't know. I mean, being chased, there's an idea that that you might be suppressing something like anger, jealousy, or resentment.
I've had a quick Google, and apparently when you dream of raspberries, it's possible that you are dealing with something delicate or precious in your waking life. If you're not careful, it could be ruined. So you are respecting the fragility or the situation or indeed the person. So you could be running away from vulnerable people, Trev. Or you're just a bit nuts.
But are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, a couple of recommendations for you. Got anything for us this week, Ben?
I do. I'll keep it brief. It's a podcast called 6 Feet Under.
6 Feet Under?
Yes. And it's a podcast from... Now, I'm bracing myself for mockery. It's a wrestling-based podcast.
Is it? Yes,
hosted by Mark Calloway, who is the Undertaker in the WWE universe. He's right. He basically... Stop it. I don't interrupt your recommendations,
do I? No, I'm excited.
He's on a podcast with other people, and he tells stories, old stories about the wrestling and wrestling past. And it's if you're a wrestling fan... You'll probably enjoy it. If you're not, there's nothing in it for you. I'd move on.
Well, it's a big deal, the old wrestling thing, isn't it? It's just a massive... Is Big Daddy on it?
I don't think Big Daddy's with us anymore, Trev.
Oh, no, he's not.
I feel like you're taking the piss now.
No, I'm sure it's fascinating. If you're into wrestling, I'm sure it's amazing.
What have you got then, Smarty Pants?
I've got a couple of things on Netflix. A programme called Baby Reindeer, which is it's a very dark... comedy drama. It's the story of a struggling comedian who meets a lonely woman who then becomes his stalker. And it's based on a true story. The guy who stars in it, it sort of happened to him. I don't know how close to truth it is, but the scenario occurred that he had this woman that he sort of befriended, and then she became a stalker. And it starts off, like, the first couple of episodes I thought, oh, this is, it's quite funny, it is a sort of comedy. But I will say, just sort of trigger warnings to people, it does get very, very dark, and it covers topics like rape and sex assault. It gets very serious and dark at times, so it may not be for everybody. But it's shot to the top of the Netflix sort of most watched list in the last week or so. I just came across it by accident, and I thought, this looks interesting. But it's one of those that everyone's talking about at the moment. There's 7 episodes. They're all quite short. They're between about half hour and 45 minutes. I loved it. I thought it was so good, so different. I had not seen much like this, but like I say, quite dark at times.
Well, that sounds interesting. I'll have to give that a look.
And the other thing I'm going to recommend is a documentary, again on Netflix, called What Jennifer Did. And it's a one-off true crime story. Jennifer's mother's been murdered. Her father's in a coma. But when he finally wakes up, his evidence changes the course of the entire investigation.
All right, barrel of laughs you're recommending this week.
I will just throw in a light-hearted thing. This is to look forward to later this week. So this podcast will be out on Wednesday. I think it's on Thursday this week on UK Gold. A 2-hour special about Bottom.
I've seen this advertised. Is it called Bottom Exposed?
I think it is called Bottom Exposed. Wait, what else could you call it? Let's be honest.
Exactly.
A bit like you on the toilet that time. So I've just been watching all of the 3 series of Bottom again. I mean, it's weird because I still love it. I still think it's so incredible. I can't believe it's so long ago now. Like, it's 30 years old.
30? Wow.
30 years old. But I still love it. You do sort of think, would they get away with a lot of that these days on the telly? But I still think it's brilliant. And I just think it's... Because I'm just so fascinated by it, I think it's going to be a great programme. So I think it's on UK Gold this week. It'll be on catch-up, of course, if you don't get to watch it on the telly at the time.
Excellent. I look forward to that.
Well, there we are. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. Right, Trev and Ben on X. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well. I'm off to dispose of Mouse's body right now. But till next week, stay safe, stay well. Take it easy.
Bye.